Continuing education credits for physicians and other healthcare professionals are provided by VCU Healthcare Continuing Education. Check out cribsiders.vcuhealth.org for more information. The Cribsiders podcast is for entertainment, education, and informational purposes only. The views and statements expressed in this podcast are solely of those of the hosts.
Welcome back to the Cribsiders. I'm Brian Ward, and tonight's episode is a little different than what we normally do. I'm joined tonight by a few of our producers. Say hi, everyone.
Hey, hello. How's it going?
Hello.
Before we talk about this episode, let's remind you a little bit about the show.
So normally, we are the pediatric medicine podcast. We interview leading experts in the field to bring clinical pearls, practice-changing knowledge, and answer lingering questions about core topics in pediatric medicine. However, tonight, we are the experts. We've gathered a few of our current resident producers to pass along some of their own pearls from their own intern experiences.
You'd be jelying if you say you're not nervous.
We have a fantastic group of producers hosting tonight. So I'm going to start at Avram. Avram, why don't you tell the group about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Avram. I'm a current PGY3 at the University of South Florida in Tampa, and I'm going to be an incoming cardiology fellow at UT Southwestern in Dallas. I enjoy collecting watches, reading some nonfiction, cooking, and being outside. And my favorite episode was myocarditis.
Hey, everyone. My name is Vishak Venkataraman. I am also a current PGY3 at Jacoby Medical Center here in the Bronx. And then starting July, I will be starting a job as a pediatric hospitalist up on Long Island. What I like to do for fun, NBA basketball, the playoffs, and I'm huge on stats, and I'm also a Niners fan. And, you know, I try to dance when I can. Sometimes now it's mainly with weddings. My favorite episode that I got to work on was the one on Trisomy 21.
Hi, everyone. I'm Denise Cruz. I am a pediatric intern. I am at Nemours Children's Hospital in Orlando, Florida. I love going to the beach, exploring new coffee shops, restaurants, and escape rooms with my fiance, and relaxing with our dog, Blue. I don't have a favorite episode per se. I typically work behind the scenes with social media, but I've honestly enjoyed learning about all of our topics with our amazing producers and everything they create.
Hey, everybody, I'm Brian Ward. I'm a graduating pediatrics resident at the Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt in Nashville, Tennessee. I right now love spending time with my baby, teaching him his new latest skill, learning how to laugh. And the favorite episode that I've produced is the tick-borne diseases. I grew up in Seattle, and so I didn't see a tick until this last year. Now I just love putting Ehrlichia or Rickettsia on the differential and just saying random tick facts on rounds.
Tick facts.
An essential role on the team is the tick person. I'm Hartley. I am an incoming intern at the University of Michigan MedPeds program. I like being outside and seeing ticks in North Carolina, where I currently am at University of Chapel Hill. And I love backpacking and hiking and all things North Carolina mountains. But thank you all for coming tonight and telling us a little bit about your own intern experiences and just passing along some things you've learned along the way.
Well, absolutely. I feel like we do our best work when we're case-based. So how about we start with a case?
If you've ever listened to a heart murmur and thought, did I really hear that? You're not alone. I've had moments in the wards where I thought I caught something subtle, maybe a faint gallop or an irregular rhythm, but with background noise, a restless patient, and no time for a second opinion, I just had to move on. That's where Echo Health came in. Being able to record the sound meant I could revisit it later. And with the help of Echo's AI, I got confirmation that what I heard wasn't just in my head. It's like having a second set of expert ears, even after you've left the room. So Echo combines the stethoscope you already know with enhanced audio and advanced AI to help you detect heart and lung conditions earlier and with more confidence. With Echo, you can hear with precision, even in noisy environments. Their digital stethoscope amplifies heart and lung sounds up to 40 times, and noise cancellation cuts out distractions. You can also detect disease earlier. Unlock murmur and AFib detection powered by Echo AI, along with sound recording sharing and more for earlier diagnoses and seamless collaborations. And lastly, it improves diagnostic accuracy. Backed by millions of heart sounds and 8 FDA clearances for devices and AI algorithms, clinical studies show that those who use Echo are 2 times more likely to detect heart disease. And a personal benefit? Teaching. I've used Echo recordings to walk learners through abnormal heart and lung sounds, and even to help patients better understand what's going on with their own bodies. It turns the stethoscope from a black box into a real-time teaching tool. So we trust Echo so much that we worked with their team to create a special offer just for our listeners. Right now, you can get up to $50 off plus a free customizable chest piece cover at echohealth.com/cribsiders. Your purchase may be HSA and FSA eligible and may also qualify for CME reimbursement. Plus, Echo guarantees you'll detect heart and lung conditions more confidently. And if you don't, return it for a full refund. So again, go to echohealth.com/cribsiders for up to $50 off plus a free chest piece cover. That's ekohealth.com/cribsiders.
I have today a fantastic case from Cashlack Children's. We have a 28-year-old female named, I'm just going to throw out a name here, just out of the blue, named Hartley. She enjoys the outdoors and has a mild tree nut allergy, and she is presenting to Cashlack Children's on July 1st. She has just graduated from Cashlack School of Medicine and is coming to you with palpitations and mild chest pain. You diagnose her with the first day jitters.
Amazing, Brian. So, I mean, I think we all have a sense that there's just so many emotions wrapped up in this July 1st. It's exciting. It is terrifying. And I think it's really important to normalize that this is a huge transition for a lot of people. So if y'all could just tell me about some of the emotions and experiences that you remember from your first few weeks of intern year.
Yeah, I think it was a transition, right? So you go from being the student to now I'm this child's doctor. And whenever you walk into a patient's room, into a child's room, you're there as the doctor talking to the child and the parent about their illness, their pathophysiology, their medicine, their treatment, you know, all sorts of factors to help them feel better. And while I guess some people kind of in the outside world have some sort of context of this, they don't necessarily realize that we've only been doing this for like a day or two. You're still their doctor. So that comes with a lot of responsibility. And I think it is a really powerful feeling just knowing that you're there and then all they want is your help, your advice, your expertise, whether or not you have it all yet.
Avram, one of my best friends is a photographer and he took a picture of me on my first day and he said those words, "You're their doctor now." And I just remember the blood rushing from my face and my eyes widening. And I still haven't seen that photo and I don't think I want to.
No, that's cute.
You should take a photo on your first day as an attending.
Oh God.
Same energy.
Yeah, I mean, that word doctor, physician carries like such a powerful title. And, you know, a lot of my friends, family, you know, and some mentors would say that, you know, that title comes with a huge amount of responsibility. And that got me more and more nervous, especially I was starting, you know, my first rotation on July 1st was NICU. And I had never done a NICU rotation before. So, you know, I came in, you know, extremely nervous. But I think the thing that I realized immediately from day one, everyone was there to help. You know, everyone, you know, especially attending, seniors, nurses, RTs, all the ancillary staff was there to help me as well as my co-interns ease into what was a very, you know, what can be a very challenging rotation. So, and I never felt like I was alone.
Yeah, and honestly, exciting and terrifying is a perfect way to put it, Hartley. I remember just feeling so conflicted. Like on one hand, I knew I had worked incredibly hard to get to this point. But on the other hand, calling myself doctor still felt surreal. And I'm still in my intern year. So honestly, every new rotation is like that. And at the same time, I just feel like so deeply honored and grateful for the opportunity just to educate parents every day and empower young patients to take control of their health so they can just live healthier and overall happier lives.
That's so beautiful. That's such a good reminder that like it's really about seeing kids at the start of their lives and like getting to meet them at such an important point for them and their family. So I'm curious, like reflecting back on your intern experience or most of your intern experience, Denise, like what was the best part? What do you remember that was just such a great thing?
For me, honestly, I feel like one of the best parts of intern year was just finally feeling like a real doctor, taking ownership of my patients, writing notes, placing orders, and just truly being a part of their care team. And beyond that, it was the connections I made with the patients and their families that really stood out. There's something just incredibly special about a parent thanking you for taking time to explain a diagnosis or reassuring them during a stressful moment.
You know, I think one of the best parts for my intern year was my clinic experience. I think Continuity Clinic is a new experience for new interns as well as new residents coming up, and this is the chance to, you know, build a trusting relationship with your patients. And you know, I think the best feeling even now is when I have a new patient that comes in and the family you know requests you as their child's pediatrician, you know, moving forward. And I think it's definitely, you know, it's humbling as well as exciting that, you know, you're going to do this for basically the rest of your career.
Oh, that's so warm and fuzzy. I mean, one thing that I'm terrified of is like, I don't have children. I don't know which way you hold the baby most of the time. And I think I'm really nervous about like parents asking me for parenting advice or just things that like, I don't know if it's normal. I have no idea. I don't know any better than them about what a 2-month-old looks like at 3:00 in the morning. Can y'all talk about sort of like how you approach those feelings in yourself or like in conversations with parents when you are their pediatrician?
Yeah. So I think despite the screaming, a 2-year-old is always cute, even at 3:00 in the morning. But yeah, I don't have kids either. And was never really around a ton growing up. I would babysit here and there and kind of in volunteer environments. But really where I've made a lot of progress, one, is asking my attendings friends who have children. And two, if I'm not sure, I spend a lot of time like, you know, turning around to the computer. Oh, let's look this up together. Let's find this out together. They ask, is this normal? I don't know, but then I'll try and find a parent-friendly resource, which is actually friendly for us as well. And we can find some good advice for them that way. But really, I think a lot of just asking people who are more experienced. I think not having kids is it's not necessarily a disadvantage in this case, but it does make things a little bit more difficult, especially like when we're talking about how to breastfeed and things like that. It's like, I don't know what that's like. So I rely on experts, so consultants, nurses, the team to kind of help form that out as well.
And everyone is there to teach you. And sometimes that even includes families and they recognize that. And I've had families who have multiple children who have chosen me as their pediatrician. And it is, like Vishak said, it is the greatest honor. And to turn to them and say, wow, what's going on? How can we manage, you know, sleep or feeding a toddler? What have you done with your other kids? Or it seems like you're very knowledgeable about this. What are some resources that you like that I can share with other families? Has gone a long way, both towards the therapeutic alliance with that family, but also with teaching me about how to manage those questions elsewhere.
Amazing. That's really helpful. I won't feel embarrassed about Googling, is baby poop supposed to be this color in front of a mom?
I do it every day.
Yeah, perfect. Well, love
not
it.
Anymore,
sorry.
But
I think I interrupted people talking about what they loved about intern year.
Yeah. So I think one of my favorite things, like I think before anything else, like I wanted to be a pediatrician and I didn't it wasn't like, I want to be a physician. It's like, I want to take care of children. I want to help children live better, healthier, longer lives. And really just getting to do that was such an honor, such a privilege. Even today, I saw a kid in the hallway with one of my friends, and I was just commenting because she was talking about going to see this new Minecraft movie. And I just looked at my friend. And I was like, I am so glad to be a pediatrician. Like, I love taking care of children. It's hard. It's difficult. It's sleep depriving. But really just getting to spend time with them in between all of the, oh, I have to do this admission and this lectures and all that, is the best thing. And secondarily, like, I'm a huge nerd. So just getting to like actually think deeply about this physiology, this pathology, and use the tools that we've been trained with, that I've been trained with, to actually make kids' lives better, is just like a really, I feel like a really powerful thing, honestly.
With all the good, there's also a lot of hard. And I want to be upfront and honest about it. Hartley, one of the things that you had mentioned, or at least that got brought up on a totally fictional one-liner for a patient who's coming in to Cashlock Children's Hospital on the first day, is nerves. And I think some of those nerves are real. For everybody else, I want to hear your perspectives. What was the hardest part of intern year for everybody?
You know, the hardest part for me, so I, you know, I'm actually originally from the West Coast, and then, you know, I moved to the East Coast for residency. So, you know, keeping up with my friends from med school, as well as my friends not in medicine, was actually the most challenging thing. You know, one, at, you know, vacation time is short and it's tough to travel across the country. So seeing them in person was very challenging, but also, you know, even phone calls, a lot of times, especially in the more challenging rotations, we don't have weekends off, or we'll have like a random Tuesday off where, and when they're working and we're usually sleeping or doing, catching up on all of our errands during that time. So there'll be months, you know, that I wouldn't have a chance to talk to my friends. So now, you know, I try to, any like long drive, or if I'm going to conferences, or if I'm, you know, going, you know, maybe once every 3-4 months, I kind of make it a point to, you know, just hang out on the phone, talk with my friends for like 2-3 hours at a time, just to catch up on things that we missed. And luckily, you know, they've been, you know, really, you know, we're still like very tight, you know, we haven't lost touch, and kind of, I think, and so it's still tough now, but I'm making it work.
You heard it here first, kids. Call your mom, call your grandma, call your friends. Denise, what about you?
Oh, yeah. I just want to echo what Vishak was saying, because I think the hardest part of intern year for me was just how new everything felt, stepping into a completely new role, new responsibilities, learning a new hospital system. Where is the nearest bathroom? Like, these are important things. But it was honestly a constant state of adjustment more than anything. And then also imposter syndrome hit the hardest too, because you work so hard to get here, but then suddenly you're questioning if you're actually good enough. And the long shifts and overnight calls can just wear you down. But I feel like in those quiet moments, the doubt can creep in. It is tough, but that's also where a lot of the growth happens. Even if just the next day you're 1% better than the day before, you're just 5 more minutes more efficient. I feel like that really has a big impact.
For me, the hours were hard, but it wasn't just the length of the hours. I wasn't expecting how emotionally charged intern year could be at times. It's hard to pour into others and to be present for relationships sometimes when work has that emotional gravity. And that was something that I didn't experience much in med school. And honestly, it's a balance that I'm still trying to strike. And my one only solution is not to care less about patients or not to leave the hospital earlier. It's to be honest with your colleagues about what you're going through, because a lot of other colleagues go through this.
Yeah, I feel like that can feel really vulnerable. Of like, I've had this really hard experience. We've known each other for 2 weeks. Do you have any tips for sort of how to make that vulnerability feel more accessible with people you don't necessarily know very well yet?
I think what builds a lot of that is that they are certainly going through the same thing. Now, it'll look different for each person, their own circumstances, things like that. But I think it's just finding people who you connect with. So I remember some friends on the first day of intern year, like who I sat with at orientation. I started talking to them a little bit more. Now that, you know, we're not a terribly big program, we're like 12 per year or something like that. So we now all get to know each other. But I think just kind of just broaching the subject and just knowing that you're not in it alone. You're in it with you know, a group of other people who are going through the very same thing. I think also just relying on your existing supports. I think that's something where I kind of failed. Like early on, people, my friends or family would ask, how are things going? And things might not have been going the best because of, you know, this attending reamed me or this child didn't do so hot. And in my head, I think a little bit, I was like, well, they're not going to understand. They've not gone through this. So I didn't always do the best job of connecting with people who care and love about me. And I think realizing that they do, and that even though they don't understand exactly what's going on, they're still helpful. They're still supportive. Now that does come along with the, there occasionally might be the comment of like, oh, it wasn't so bad. Or, you know, it's just, it could be worse, that kind of thing where they don't really get it. And that kind of can, you know, rub me the wrong way a little bit at times, but those support systems are super important. And I think the one in residency, I think that will come. I think it's really interesting. Like at this point in my life, like I am so much closer to my co-residents than any other group of friends. It's different than my med school friends. It's different than my undergrad friends. It's different than my friends from, you know, sports teams growing up. Like we are so close. And I think we have a lot of very different personalities, and my goodness, do we disagree on how to, you know, do everything from how to take care of a kid to like how to, you know, get direction somewhere. We still fight about these things, but it really does become a group of people you can rely on. And I do want to say, like, I don't know that this is universal. Like there may be programs where people don't get along with others, and that might not be the case, but there will be people at the center who care about you, even if like you're not close with every single person. who can help you navigate that.
Well, I think that would be a good time to talk about not just the overarching theme of intern year, but what do you do on day one and some of these clinical topics. So let's go around and talk about some of our favorite pieces of clinical advice.
Yeah. Brian, do you want to start?
Oh, goodness. I'm queuing up with that. One of my favorite ones, I asked a colleague for this. So this comes shamelessly from a co-resident, but she said, set the bar low. And I couldn't agree more. You're not expected to know much right off the bat, but be open and communicate with the fact that you're learning and ask every single question from day one. It's the only way you're going to learn. Everybody there is there to teach you, but they don't know what to teach you if you're not asking the questions.
One of my attendings said that she never worries about the med students who ask questions. They are fine. It's the ones who are not asking questions that she is scared of.
You know, and kind of like piggybacking off of that, I think, you know, a lot of people, a lot of, you know, your seniors as well as attendings will, you know, tell you, you know, or tell you to study this way or to read this article or to do this a certain way. But I feel like as you progress, say from like undergrad to med school and med school to residency, I feel at least for me, the way that I learned was different. For example, in med school, it would just keep doing questions or keep doing flashcards every minute. But then now in residency, it's kind of completely changed. Initially, the first day, you know, I subscribed to AAP. I got all the peds and review books, and you know, I was like, I'm going to read an article every day or every week. Did not happen.
Go.
It did.
Collect dust.
No, yeah. It month three, I had three unopened books. So you know, and then I realized that my drives are pretty long. I drive over an hour to get to work, and I was already caught up on, you know, I was listening to the same music over and over again. I was like, okay, might as well, you know, maybe learn something. So I tuned into podcast, Cribsiders, wink, wink.
Shameless plug.
And, you know, I learn something new every day. And then, you know, when someone would say Pearl or, talk about an article, I would kind of pin that and then I'd look that up and learn something new. And that's basically, you know, and I still do that now. So that's how I learn.
One thing that really helped me before, it was an inpatient rotation specifically, but honestly, this could be for any rotation, is to take advantage of your upper levels and maybe steal some, you know, dot phrases or smart phrases from them. And then really familiarize yourself with where orders are, how to do things. And honestly, it sounds simple, but it made such a huge difference in helping me be more efficient from day one.
So I think one of the, it feels like a con sometimes, is you're going to be busy and you're going to see a lot of children. You're going to see a lot of healthy children and a lot of sick children. So one thing that I really, really committed to doing was as thorough an exam as possible on every child. That's ears, that's mouth, that's heart, lungs. Really, because then you get to know what's a normal variant, what's abnormal and a problem versus abnormal and not a problem. That's how you tell if a child is sick, if they're not sick, if you are worried that a child's crashing. Particularly if a nurse says they're worried about a child, you should ask them why they're worried about the child, and they'll tell you why they're worried because they've been doing it for long enough to know that this particular, you know, nasal flaring is impending doom for that child. Additionally, I think we really want to be opportunists. So when you're examining a child, you want to do the things that require some quiet first. So always heart, lungs first. That's not just as a future cardiologist, but the last thing you want to do is stick an otoscope in a kid's ear, and then you tell them to be quiet and breathe normally. And so just be opportunistic. You can learn so much from seeing a kid from the bedside. You can do a neuro exam by holding the toy in front of them and having them reach for it and, you know, showing them how strong you are. And actually, I picked up a tip of, I just dangle my badge in front of a baby and sometimes a toddler, and they will just focus on that. And finding ways to do that complete thorough exam in the way that the child will let you and in the order the child will let you will really help you when you have a sick child who wants to fight you, and by God, they will not let you look in their ears if it's the last thing they do. So really, really being focused, being repetitive, and just knowing how you're doing it the same thing just about every time will really help you and then help you understand like the range of how kids can appear.
The other same thing every time that I like to do is pre-chart. I, from day one, asked my senior, how do you pre-chart? What is the order that you go in? And I have my own order, and it starts with vitals and it ends on, you know, usually ends on like images or something like a dessert at the end of the meal. But ask your senior what you want or how they pre-chart, and then do it the same way every time. You'll get faster, you'll get more efficient. And then for me, it's also kept me more detail oriented. I started changing things up when I noticed I was missing specific things. I missed a fever on a kid. And so now the fever chart is the third thing I look at.
Similarly with pre-charting, I think patient presentations as well, the same way over and over again, you know, may seem redundant, may seem tedious. You know, people may be on their phones. Don't worry, they're looking at Epic. They're not, you know, it may be lost, but, you know, every single, you know, point is important there. And one, it's for learning. And two, I think the bigger thing is so that everyone on the team is on the same page and is not missing something. For example, say, the attending will do their own assessment, but they may miss a vital sign, or they may miss an exam finding or an imaging or something that a consult service said at 6 a.m. or something like that. And, you know, when you mention it, then, you know, they'll kind of perk up and kind of you'll go more off of that. So just following that same template.
You're never too good for the fundamentals. You're never too good for the fundamentals. And so do your full exam. I think do your, you know, exactly what Kishak is saying. Continue to say the one-liner and a clear assessment at every patient, no matter how casual things get. It's important. And if you build up that muscle, it will carry you through a lot of challenging situations. It will keep you focused.
Yeah. It's like you have to know the rules before you can break them. And
even if you don't break them.
Or just don't break them. That's fine too.
We are rule followers here at CashLack.
Whether this is your first episode or you've been with us since day one, you know our goal has always been to share clinical pearls, practice-changing knowledge, and maybe a fun pun in pediatric medicine. So let's talk about something that actually changed my day today as a hospitalist, and that's figs. I can't walk into a clinic or hospital without seeing people in fig scrubs. And I get it. I wear them too. They're incredibly soft, form-fitting, and durable. And it's not just us. If you've been watching a certain popular ER drama on TV that may or may not take place in Pittsburgh, PA, yep, they're in figs too. These scrubs get it. That's what drew me in and what keeps me coming back. And because we work with kids and kids come with messes, I love that figs are antimicrobial. When stuff gets on your scrubs, and it will, you just wash them and they come out wrinkle-free. I've washed mine over 50 times and they still look brand new. So Cribsiders listeners, with back-to-school season upon us, it's the perfect time to stock up on some fresh outfits for the year. And Figs just dropped a brand new collection of limited edition styles and accessories. So get 15% off your first order at wearfigs.com with the code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX. FIGSRX.
Let's talk a little bit about, and I'm going to go a tiny bit off script here, triaging pages, because I think the pager burden is a huge part of intern year. How do y'all triage pages? What troubles have you run into?
Pages are difficult because they are jarring and they come up at any given time. And until you know, it's like Schrodinger's page. You don't know what that message is about. And I think there's a couple of ways you can go about this. So you get page, you should call back about as soon as you can because it's hard to say what it's for. But oftentimes you'll get some messages on like your EMR's chat feature, and the nurses will just report something, and you can say, "Why are you concerned?" or "What do you mean by this?" or you can ask them what they're trying to tell you. You don't have to read between the lines. But I think just one. Just knowing what they're asking is really important, and two, just being able to respond in a timely way.
Seems like this is really hard.
I think it's also really important, right? So I'm actually working at our institution to try and reframe the way we do some of these things. So you'll get sometimes a page or a message, and it's all about like the urgency of what's going on too. So if you have a sick child who is at risk for decompensation, is flagging whichever SIRS or PUS or sepsis risk score you have, that requires an urgent evaluation at the bedside versus, sometimes there's a little bit less urgent. So I think it's really important to realize what they're asking, what they're saying, and then to kind of going through some of your steps to say, you know, if I don't assess this right now at the bedside, what's going to go wrong? And like, what's the harm I'm going to do if I'm not there, basically?
I think that's helpful. I think something that I've been thinking a lot about is like how you know when you have or when you should go see the patient versus when you can safely answer the question. I think I'm going to just inevitably go see every patient and then I'm going to realize that that's unsustainable.
Actually, let me ask Brian that, I think. So I think it's really hard. Do you have any ways you manage that?
I'd say just right off the bat, when in doubt, see the patient.
Yep.
If it's in your mind, gosh, should I see this patient or not? Go see the patient. If you are so busy and there is no, and you are maybe at the bedside of another patient who's very sick too. So it's not just, you know, you're busy playing cards in your lounge or whatever. If you're so busy, call the nurse and say, "I am really sorry. I'm in another patient's room. Are you worried? Or is there something is there another person that I can send? Should I escalate this to my senior resident?"
Yeah, and don't be afraid to escalate it to your senior resident or even your attending. You know, there may be, depending on your institution, overnight there may not be an attending in-house or whatever the situation is. I promise you, it's better to escalate up to a senior or even the attending versus not. If there's ever an inkling where it's like, should I call them? Should I not? You should call them.
Even if they're asleep?
Even if they're asleep. Yes.
That was something I really actually struggled with early on, because they want you to be the doctor and they want you to call them only when it's necessary. Well, how do I know only when it's necessary when I've been doing this for 5 days? So it's hard. And I think by default, you should call them, right? Like, it's annoying. It's a pain. It wakes them up. But the harm in not calling him is a child could potentially worsen their clinical course. And I would much rather make my attending a little bit sleepier than have a child become sicker.
And your attending would rather that too, also.
Yes.
They're aware. They've done this before.
Yeah. And I think, and at least in my center, it's really nice. So we don't have a ton of attendings in-house. So we have an ICU resident, a floor resident, a newborn, and a NICU resident. I've had a really, actually, one time recently, I had a really fortunately quiet night in the PICU, and all of my kids were stable, tucked in, chilling. And my buddy on the floor was getting blown up by newborn pages. And there I am as the ICU resident, fielding calls about nice low bilirubins and can this mom have some partially hydrolyzed formula. Like, your friends are there to help you, and you know, it may not always be equal. I did more for them than they did for me, but they're always there to help you. They want the best for you. They want the best for the children. So if you have friends in the house too, they're good people to lean on.
Maybe I could say another word about leaning on your friends. One of my favorite tips and tricks is, if you're rounding with another resident and your team structure allows for it, put in orders for each other on rounds. This will make care move a little bit faster. This will get the consult know that they have a patient to see a little bit sooner, but then let each other know what you've done so that you don't double page a consultant or accidentally order two AMCBCs. But your team acts like it.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah, I've gotten to realize, like, I'm actually, well, I keep saying this and everyone else is like, we know, but I'm kind of a nerd and I love.
We know.
Thanks, Brian. If you see a several paragraph long assessment and a citation or two, it's probably from me. And I got that from some really good attendings. I love thinking about children and medicine and how to make them feel better. What's going on? All of that. The issue with that is you can easily get lost in the notes. And it's really important to realize that notes are not the work. Like, taking care of children is the work. So your documentation is super important. It needs to be clear. It needs to be accurate. There's always that classic, like, oh, this child's ET tube's taped at 6 at the gum and they've been extubated for a week. Like, that happens. And it's not great. But really, like what Brian's saying, if you can efficiently get orders in, consult in, and move the patient's care forward, you're going to help that child out. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, if a new child's coming in from the ED and they're sick in the ED, like, you don't want to be the one stuck sitting there like, I think I'm going to start dextrose fluids versus like whatever. You want to be the one who's like actually helping see that child. That said, also, the faster and more efficiently that you can do your notes, the more children you can see, which sounds like a bit of a punishment, but it's also good for learning and actually seeing a good variety of kids. So, and also, I think it's just super important to recognize the parent's role in their child's care. They know their child super well. So if a parent's telling you their child's not right, that child's not right. This particularly applies to children with medical complexity, children who may be nonverbal, children with developmental delays. You know, sometimes you'll get this kid in the trauma in the ICU and they're sedated, they wake up and they're just like absolutely wigging out. And you talk to the parent, like, what helps comfort them? What can we do to help them feel more normal, calm them down, make them feel, you know, more comfortable in this space? And those couple of things are really helpful because they're with that child just about all the time. And as many children as we see, I don't take that for granted. We see a ton of children, you'll learn a lot. But each parent knows their kid the best. So that's really good to rely on that.
I think my last piece of clinical advice is one of my favorite sayings: don't ignore what you can't explain. I love saying this all the time on rounds. And it's a reminder really to myself as much as anybody else. I'm remembering, like, every acute liver failure at one point had a little bit of bump in the transaminases if you caught it at the right time. And so if you see something, if you're scrolling through your morning labs and saying, like, huh, the hemoglobin's down a little bit, but this kid's admitted for bronchiolitis, think about it, because maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a physiologic nadir. Maybe it's the beginning of a new, different illness, or maybe it's the progression of an illness that you or the team has misdiagnosed.
Wow, you sounded like such an attending right there. That was so beautifully said.
See you in 2 months.
Don't ignore what you can explain. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So at this point, I think maybe we should leave the hospital. I'm curious if y'all just have quality of life tips for your friendly neighborhood interns. What have you done that has made your life better in residency?
Yeah, I feel like leaving the hospital, you should definitely leave the hospital there. You know, don't forget about yourself. Just don't forget about yourself. It's so easy to get caught up in work, you know, studying for step 3 or level 3 during your intern year, keeping up with the demands of every new rotation. But take a little time each day to do something just for yourself, whether that's, you know, spending some time at the pool, at your apartment, or reading a good book, something non-medical, hopefully to get your mind off the hospital. But even those small moments of rest or joy can just really keep you grounded.
Yeah. One of my resident friends was telling me that on a particularly tough rotation at 4 p.m. every day, she would just go get a frozen yogurt. Mm-hmm. And for 2 weeks, would just ate frozen yogurt every day at 4 p.m. because it was free. And it was that kind of week.
What? I know we can't talk about this.
Are they accepting transfers, actually?
That is a perk.
That is a perk. Vishak, what about you?
So I'm going to go back to the hospital, but I promise it's non-clinical. So I remember one time I was on a 24-hour shift, and it was getting late. We were doing our evening rounds, and to my senior at the time, I was like, "Man, my feet feel gross," and he was like, "Dude, you don't have extra socks?" I'm like, "No, you do." He's like, "I carry 3 on me all the time," and I'm like, "Okay, I guess I'll try it the next time." So I brought an extra pair, and then, you know, at the 12-hour mark, I put them on. I was like, man, it's a whole new day. You know, I was like skipping in rounds. I was taking the stairs, and I was like, you know, killing it, you know? So pack an extra pair of socks.
Not just socks.
Come here for the clinical pearls. That's incredible. We don't have 24s at my center. We do night float. And for us, night shift tummy is infamous. On like night 2, your whole GI system is upside down. I realize that in part that's, you can't avoid it, but also if you don't eat the curly fries every night from the cafeteria, and if you don't pack the frozen yogurt, unfortunately, like my night shift tummy got a lot better with like raisins and carrots, and when I ate, like I told my toddlers in clinic how they should be eating.
You're never too fancy for a little bit of psyllium husk in your water. Like, you can have a little bit of fiber and it'll make you feel so much better. Avoiding brand names, of course. I think we're busy. With me being a nerd, but my favorite part of the day is rounding. Like, every time, whenever I'm not...
I've never heard a resident say that before in my life, but I love that for
but
you.
Like, okay, well, my actual favorite part of the day is like giving kids stickers and hanging out with kids. But as far as like being a doctor, like I love talking, thinking, and all that stuff. So back to me being a nerd, I think one of my favorite things is rounding. Like, I think my real favorite thing is spending time with children, giving them stickers, and talking about our favorite Blue Healer TV and her family. But really, when I'm talking about this, you can round for as long as you want, but it's really important that you take care of yourself. You're never too busy to drink some water, to go to the bathroom. Like, there's a really funny study that came out of an ICU in the UK talking about how the ICU junior doctors were more oliguric than their patients. Like, we do not need to be causing AKIs in ourselves. So please drink water. Please eat some fiber. Eat a vegetable. Use the restroom when you can. Like, you know, like your attendings might give you a little bit for like leaving rounds for a couple minutes, but like really your own health is most important. And there's no reason to not take care of yourself.
Yeah. And speaking of taking care of yourself and also the night shift tummy, make sure you brush your teeth if you're on a long shift, please. Oral health is everything too. So make sure to brush your teeth. And on the same line of changing your socks, you'll honestly feel like it's a new day. You're like, wow, I just woke up, brushed my teeth, I'm ready for a great rest of the shift.
Wow, your co-residents will thank you too.
And find a good bathroom. I know the exact bathroom that I use for the night shift.
Any other life tips, life hacks, things you've learned through trial and error?
Honestly, I think what I really like is I'm kind of the music person, so I'm always playing some music in the workroom. I'm always finding something to liven it up. If the budget allows it, I will, we'll either get students coffee or we'll go do something. And really making time when you're in work to make it a little bit more tolerable is really important. We spend a lot of time here in the hospital, just by nature of it. But finding ways to make it a little bit more pleasant is really nice. I like to bake for friends, so then I get to have the benefit of making something, but not having to have to eat it all. But really, just like taking care of each other is really important, and finding small ways to do that.
I guess ultimately, too, we are so privileged to be able to take care of children. And if you can continue to find joy in taking care of children, you will be richer than anybody else in any other profession.
And Hartley, I really hope you find joy in taking some care of your adults too.
We don't have to talk about them here. But yes, I do feel really, really lucky that my job lets me wear fun colored clothes and bring stickers and like not hide that part of who I am and that I love that and that I unironically find a lot of joy in that component. And it's, I would love to talk to you about cartoons and have it be part of my job.
Yeah, I love when the bubbly attending kind of like laughs and giggles at a kid, but sometimes it's the old, like really harder attending when you get them like giggling like a child because someone's like a kid said they farted or something. Like that's even better. Like that, because you don't expect that. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's perfect. It is. You're exactly right. I love a workplace where fart jokes kill. So, I'm curious, y'all, like, we obviously have a close relationship with the Cribsiders and have maybe affinity for learning through podcasts, but were there any episodes, Cribsiders or otherwise, that you think are really helpful or think cover topics that you really wish you would have known July 1?
Let's bring it back to the beginning, the first few episodes. I actually recently just took a listen to them again, specifically, episode 2 on bronchiolitis, just to see kind of what was discussed. And, it's as relevant as ever, especially for, intern year, once we're starting to get to, October to March, where it's respiratory season. I think that is a great episode where, to understand who is sick, what sick is and what not sick is, what's respiratory distress, respiratory failure, and, how to go through that, because we as pediatricians will be seeing a lot of that.
I'm a big fan of number 33, the febrile infant, when babies are too hot. One, I just think that tagline is really funny. It's always tickled me. But this is also a common situation, the febrile neonate or the sepsis rule out, that's usually very stressful for parents. If you know a bit about the Feb Neo management, it will instill some confidence in parents. Plus, neonatal sepsis, when it is for real, is no joke. And so you might save a life by knowing this or by starting a child on AmpGent in the nick of time.
Yeah. As someone who occasionally like thinks he should have been a nephrologist, I love 76 IV fluids, salty and sweet. I think you're going to get so many of like, I'm going to put this kid on NPO and on IV fluids at midnight for their pre-op. And never mind, we can talk about how that might be a little bit overused here and there. But realizing that anything you're doing, any intervention you're doing has risks, has benefits. Like fluids are medicine. They feel like they're not, but they are. And I think whether this is teaching you how to be thoughtful with what you're ordering, this is teaching you how to even calculate a maintenance rate for a child, it also teaches you to be really thoughtful. So when we are placing any orders, we want to know what this is going to do for the child, what are the risks, what are the harms for anything we're giving them. and really want to avoid as much as possible being automatic. Order sets are really useful tools. They help us avoid clinical mistakes. I like all these clinical decision tools. But you still really want to know the underlying reason for why you're doing some of the interventions you're doing, rather than just saying, "Oh, this is the guideline." Now, guidelines are really useful as far as like a fallback, because you're never going to go wrong if you follow the guideline to the T. That may or may not always be the best thing for an individual child, but knowing kind of where those are and where you can differ, and I think that's something you'll maybe not get first day of intern year, but you'll kind of get as you move along. To that same end, I really like the Things We Do for No Reason series. Really hoping to do a little bit more of those, because that is really puts under a magnifying glass that there's a lot of uncertainty in medicine that we are not comfortable with. And we do things because we're told we do it because they work. I don't want to bury the lead too much, but of an upcoming episode on congenital syphilis, and the expert we interviewed talked about penicillin. We use penicillin because it's worked for so long. We don't have any trials on that, but we just know it works. And while that's like a really excellent public health measure and infectious disease measure, there's a lot of things we just don't know why they work. We don't know all the risks and benefits. So being really thoughtful about what you're doing and trying to understand the reasons for making the decisions you're making.
So another episode that I recommend for interns is Parenting for the Pediatrician. There's a few of them, but it's honestly so important to understand why we're ordering the medications that we're ordering, why we're ordering the labs that we're ordering, just to help the parent understand. Just be prepared to explain everything so clearly, anticipate those parental questions. And parents honestly really appreciate thoughtful communication too.
Are there any resources or other podcasts or apps or things that you use every day that you would recommend?
Yeah. I know we've collaborated with them before, but, Peds on Call, the AAP podcast, it's pretty concise and, and great tips, as well as gives some good primary articles that I can take a look and take a read, when I have the time. So highly recommend that as well.
So I have on my phone, I set a work focus where it changes the apps on my home screen. So I have a lot of clinical tools. I have blood pressure calculators. I have our favorite tool for like medical calculations. I have a pediatric reference book from the AAP. Like I have all those tools, and I will shamelessly pull them out on rounds. I will say, I don't know this thing. Can I look it up? Or like, whatever, like it's, here's how to do this calculation. And then what I love to do is I love to, anytime I find a good primary source or find a decision tree or an algorithm, I'll screenshot it and I'll have an album of just like medical screenshots. I have flow sheets. I have calculations. I have all sorts of things to explain to learners and interns and to myself on re-review that are super useful. So anytime you find something that you're looking up more than one time, I'd take a screenshot of it and just keep it in your photos.
Yes. And I'm going to one up your nerd on that.
Let's go.
I also like to, so those common things that you look at every day, I screenshotted like pediatric vital signs and put it as my home screen.
Yes.
So if I just unlock my phone, there it is. I'm pre-charting in the morning. Oh, that's normal. Oh, that's not normal. Then I know right away. I don't have to be like, oh, what is that again? So definitely do that. And you can change your home screen too. So if you switch to another rotation, you go to the ED, you go to nephrology, switch that home screen, and then you're good to go.
Wow. Stunning. Flavor of the week. Love it. Amazing. Anything else?
Can I plug a TV show? I don't know, is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, I've been watching The Pit.
Yeah.
Recently.
Who hasn't?
I know. I feel like everyone has.
Just recurrent trauma.
No spoilers. I guess.
Not Brian.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
And, I'm that person that after a long day's, work likes to, relive work. But, but it's great. My wife and I, that's kind of like our hour of TV every week. And now, more and more shows are doing this thing where you have to wait a week to watch one episode, which
who
is
knew?
Kind of painful, but it's getting me back to it. So yeah.
Yeah. I've heard people say that it's actually quite helpful with sort of what you were talking about earlier, Avram, that like not all your family might not understand what you're going for. And they've like recommended shows like The Pitt or Scrubs. And said like, this is what work is like.
Yeah. It's a little exaggerated, but it's not that far from reality. I think they're kind of, it's TV, but it's not that far. I think this might come as a surprise to you, Hartley, and maybe others, but there are other podcasts as well. So
in life.
So I have several that I listen to. I love like the NPR stuff. Dissect is a really cool music podcast that goes through like various like albums and artists. So those are really cool. And just like finding ways to disconnect a little bit can be really nice too.
Yeah.
Switch it up. They're fantastic medical podcasts. But if you open your phone and you groan and don't want to listen to anything, you're listening to the wrong things. Take some time away from medicine.
Love it. Wow. Beautiful. Amazing. Well, thank you everyone for sharing so many thoughtful pearls and experiences and memories. I really think this is going to be helpful for folks who are feeling a little bit worried, a little bit nervous, and just help them remember, like y'all said, that you're not alone and these are normal experiences and this is a normal life transition, just like we tell our patients.
And it's going to be fun a lot of the time. It's going to be hard a lot of the time, but really, hopefully it'll be a really nice, worthwhile experience for all y'all.
Well, this has been another episode of The Cribsiders.
It's for the kids.
Get show notes and sign up for our bi-weekly Knowledge Food Formula Feeds newsletter at our website at www.thecribsiders.com.
We are committed to providing you with high-value, practice-changing knowledge. And to do that, we need your feedback. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts or contact us at thecribsiders@gmail.com. Special thanks to all of our guests tonight, to our showrunner, Sam Mazur, to our wonderful social media team, which is mostly Denise on X, Blue Sky, and Instagram. I have been Hartley Linsky.
I've been Avram Rago.
I've been Vishak Venkataraman.
And I've been Denise Cruz.
And this has been Brian Ward. Thank you and good night.
And for a quick haiku, as always, by our generative GPT, read by our intern, Denise Cruz.
White coat, heavy steps. Midnight blurs when morning rounds. Coffee fuels the hope.
No truer words.
Beautiful.